Good evening. Thank you for coming. For all of you who've been here before, thank you for coming back. I look forward to the lesson tonight. I enjoy preaching about Peter. He's one of my heroes. He's the one of all the apostles that I seem to more identify with. Possibly because I know more about his failures than I do the others. We're studying with you a series of lessons on a theme of building character through Bible characters. We're looking at various characters in the Bible with the view of building our character. And for a little bit of review, what is character? Well, I present it to you in three parts. First of all, there are three persons that we are. The person that we believe we are, which is our ego or ego. Then there is the person that other people believe that we are, and that's our reputation. And then there's the person that God knows that we are, and that's our character. And the challenge of our life is to make this tripart or this three person into one. To quit being the schizophrenic person. That's one person to other people, one person to ourselves, and a completely different or another person to God. We want to be the person that God knows that we are and that God wants us to be. One of the ways that we do that is to be able to have our failures and our weaknesses exposed. Now, I'd like to begin this lesson by asking you, how many of you have ever failed spiritually? I want to see the hands of all those who have failed spiritually. I got the right crowd. We all have. Some people, after learning the demands of the gospel, are reluctant to obey it because of fear of failure. They just don't think they can live up to it. Others, after becoming Christians, they quit because they're overcome by sorrow and guilt because they have failed in their faith. They simply don't understand how Jesus deals with failures. And so we reference Simon Peter. This picture I've always loved by Gorgias de la Tour. Of course, he doesn't know what Peter looked like. We don't have our camera on.
Well, it's on. It's just somehow it's now it's on.
There it is. And I've always enjoyed this picture, and I imagine, of course, it's just a speculation as to what Peter looked like. More than likely, he didn't look like this. More Semitic looking. But at any rate, it gives us something to just think about of Peter. Here in a prayerful mood, possibly after his failures. And so I want to talk to you about Peter's story, confessions and denials. Of all the apostles that are recorded in Scripture, Peter's confessions are recorded more than the others. So I'm going to focus our attention on four episodes where Peter makes confessions. But I also want to show you where in juxtaposition of that, where he denies, or there is some form of failure or lack of faith. And I want to ask you to ask yourself this question as we proceed through this lesson. Why does God want us to know about Peter? Why? How is he using him? Surely to teach us and to encourage us. And so I've subtitled it From Failure to Faithfulness. Now you raised your hand a moment ago. Almost everyone did. So I'm talking to a whole house full of failures. So let's go from failure to faithfulness. That's what we want to see. How does Jesus deal with failures like me? And like you. A little bio on Peter. He was from Capernaum. sea town of Galilee. I've been to the site where they think Capernaum was. He also was a fisherman. He was an honest truth seeker. I really believe that. He was brought to Jesus by his brother Andrew, and he was married. You say, well, how do you know he was married? Well, it says he had a mother-in-law, and it seems to me to be a bit unfair to have a mother-in-law and not be married. Now, that's the only mother-in-law joke I know. In fact, I want to defend mother-in-laws, because every mother-in-law I've ever had has been wonderful. So, he was married. Further, he was rugged, and he was aggressive. Also, he was impulsive at times. He was brave, but also afraid and cowardly. Isn't it amazing how we have a whole collection of contradictions in our lives? I bet you thought you were the only one. Well, here's Peter, both brave and at other times afraid and cowardly. He was a preacher and an elder of the church. Peter's names are interesting. His given name was Simon. From the Old Testament, Simeon. Leah's second son, she called Simeon, because God had heard Leah's cry, and so she gave her second son the name Simeon, which comes into the New Testament, Simon. Now remember this. To hear. Simon, to hear. And then Jesus gave him the name Peter, or rock, or stone. Jesus gave himself this name. What's the message in the names? Simon, Simon, he says on many occasions. Is he not telling us, hear me, hear me. Are you listening? What's the message? The Lord has heard my cry by making me into a strong rock of faith. I want you to watch how Jesus takes a very mercurial man. Up, down, bold, cowardly, and turns him into a steady rock of faith. The next time you see in your life, or you see in the life of one of your fellow brothers and sisters, this in and out, up and down, think of Peter. Think what God did with Peter. When you see that in yourself, know that Jesus can make you into a rock of faith if you'll be a Simon, one who hears, one who listens, one who learns, one who strives to follow Jesus. Peter's story, let us begin. His first confession that we will consider: I am a sinful man, O Lord. What's the message? From worthlessness to usefulness. The scene is Lake Gennesaret. This is another name for the Sea of Galilee. When I first saw the Sea of Galilee, I came on the southwestern part of the road there. We were coming up from Tiberias. And we were coming, and we were, even lower than Tiberias. Sorry, we were coming up from the Jezreel Valley, and we were coming, and as we approached, we came around, and there it was. And I remarked, this is not a sea, it's a lake. And our tour director obviously knew the Bible better than I did, said, well, you know, that's what Luke calls it, Lake Gennesaret. You know, 15 miles north to south, 8 miles east to west. You could see almost the whole lake from that high vantage point. As I said earlier in this series, we got bigger cattle ponds in Texas than this. It's not a very big place. Lake Gennesaret. And this is a picture of it from the western shore. Let's get our text. Now it happened that while the crowd was pressing around him and listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, but the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, like we think this one here. This is a replica of what they call the Jesus boat that was dug up out of the lake that had been encrusted there with the mud and the silk and preserved it, which was Simon's. He was a fisherman and had a boat. And asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he sat down and began teaching the people from the boat. So you've got the scene. Jesus is teaching from Simon's boat, a little way from the land. Likely the shoreline is sloping upward. The people can sit there or stand, and Jesus can speak to them. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water," and I've highlighted the words and phrases I want you to think about. "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Simon answered and said, "Master, we worked hard all night and caught nothing. But I will do as you say." And he let down the nets. Now I want you to look at this for a moment. What do we have? We have a carpenter telling a professional fisherman how to fish. How open are you to somebody who's not in your trade or in your profession or in your field of expertise to come into your life and say, "Well, this is the way you ought to do it"? It's like me going to Sandy and say, "Sandy, here's how you ought to cook this meal. And let me tell you. Let me show you here. This is how you ought to do this." Any of you know me very well know that that is not a field of my expertise. And she's a good cook. Well, here is a carpenter telling a professional fisherman how to fish. Now, it was the standard operating procedure for them to fish relatively close to the shore. In other words, in the more shallow water. Not out in the deep water. And further, what they had fished all night. How much had they caught? How much? Nothing. Not one. Well, they're just not running right now. I mean, this is not a good time to fish for them. But what was Peter's response? "But at your word, we will do as you say." We will do as you say. Are you prepared to do that? Sooner or later, there's going to be something that Jesus asks you to do, and you think, "Well, I just don't know that we need that, or that that's the best thing to do." Will you do it simply at His word? Because He told you to do it. He commands it. This will be a test of whether or not we're listening. And further, He tells him to get out into the deep water. It's more dangerous in the deep water. Storms can come up quickly in this lake that's 8 miles across and 15 miles north to south. That wind comes whipping down off of Mount Hermon, and it's cold, and it hits that water, and it can stir it up and cause a storm quickly. It's deep. I think it's 50 or 80 to 100 feet deep out there in the center. I saw a recent graphic and I forgot the footage, but it's a deep lake. It's dangerous. I want to ask you and ask myself, do you want to get into the deep water of spiritual service to the Lord, or are we just satisfied staying in the kiddie pool? Just paddling around in the shallow water. In other words, are we prepared at the Lord's command to push our comfort zone in whatever service to the Lord we see that He wants us to render? So, "Well, I just don't know how to greet visitors. I don't know how to be hospitable in my home and have people over and So I don't know how to speak to anyone about the scriptures. I don't know how to do this or that or whatever it might be. All right, that's the given. Will we push ourselves to go out into the deep water of real spiritual living? But I will do as you say and let down the nets. And what happened? When they had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish, and their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat for them to come and to help them. And they came and filled both of the boats so that they began to sink. Would you give your heart fully to the Lord? He fills you up to overflowing. If you ever wondered why it is that some people seem to have so many opportunities to serve the Lord, and why some churches grow and grow and grow and others don't, could it be that we have people who are willing to put out into the deep water and others who just want to stay in the shallow water where it's comfortable, we know everything about it, we don't have to push ourselves? But when Simon Peter, see, before he called him Simon, Simon, are you listening? Now, Simon, are you ready to become a rock? But when Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' feet, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." Here's the reason. For amazement had seized him and all of his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. You know, when you encounter Jesus, there are going to be moments where you're simply not going to be comfortable. He's going to make you feel uncomfortable. His perfectness, His purity, His power. As you look to Him and see yourself, you're going to feel uncomfortable. The Lord's Supper often is a time in which we run back over our lives, and we see how far we have fallen short. But we look to Him. And so Peter now, if you will, is comparing the Lord to himself. And he feels uncomfortable. He says, "Go away, Lord. I am a sinful man." In essence, he's saying, "Lord, I'm worthless. I just can't be of any use to you at all." Look what Jesus responds. And Jesus said to Simon, "Listen to me, Simon. Do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men." Now, which is harder? Catching fish or catching men with the gospel? Well, obviously, catching men is eminently harder. Fish don't have much of a choice in the matter. Or if they do, we trick them with various bait. And, you know, we fool them. We're like the devil. Did you know all of you fishermen are like the devil? You use lures and things that are not real. But when we use these nets, we just throw them out there and we pull them in against their will. Not so with the gospel. The net of the gospel, in essence, says, "Jump in the net." Well, that's eminently harder. When they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed Him. From worthlessness to usefulness. If you're feeling worthless in your service to the Lord, look to Jesus. Allow Him to show you that area of usefulness. In other words, I don't think that the Lord really will use a person who sees himself as, you know, "Well, I've really got, I'm an expert in this." Have you ever found an expert Christian? I hope to never find one. We're all amateurs. And God has asked amateurs to do the most important things. I've noted that when we get ready to have people render judgments upon us in civil and criminal trials, what do we often do? Well, we get a jury of 12 or 10 or whatever the law calls for of our peers. Amateurs. Have you ever met an expert parent? If you ever do, you'll find a failure. The only really successful parents are the ones who are amateurs and know it. And therefore, they're always looking for help. They're always looking for better ways to do it. And so it is with being a Christian. So it is with serving the Lord. From worthlessness to usefulness. Then let's look at our next confession. He confesses, I am afraid, Lord, save me. I'm afraid. And the characteristic we're looking at, from fear to faith. Now this time it's nighttime on the Sea of Galilee. It's just after the feeding of the 5,000, where Jesus is hailed by the multitudes and they come to crown him as king. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, that's from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Now, before we go to our next slide, see this picture here that our artist has drawn? Who's trying to get out of the boat? Y'all tell me. Who's trying to get out of the boat?
Peter.
Peter. Are you a Peter? Watch it. Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Do you do that? In all honesty, I don't think I'd do that. I'd just stay right there in that boat. We're in a storm. We're afraid for our lives. We now have been afraid or startled by something coming, and it must be a ghost. And it says, "Don't be afraid, boys. It is I." Do you say, "Well, Lord, if it's really you, command me to come to you on the water. I want to walk on the water to you." If it's really you, do you do that? That takes courage. That takes a level of faith and confidence in the voice of Jesus. And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water. I wonder what that'd be like. What would it be like to walk on the water in a storm? Now, I floated in the Dead Sea. And you can't sink. But I didn't walk on it. Walking on the water in a storm. He just must be thinking, wow. And he's walking toward Jesus in a storm. But seeing the wind. He hadn't seen the wind. He knew the wind was there. But now he focuses upon the wind. But seeing the wind, he became frightened. I imagine he begins to think, "I'm out here in a storm. I could drown." But what did he do? Seeing the wind, he took his eyes off of Jesus. seeing the wind, he became frightened and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. What did the Lord do? Just go ahead and sink. I told you, you know that you could come to me. You didn't believe me, so just go ahead and sink. He didn't do that. Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? What do you see in Jesus? He works with us where we are. Here's a moment where Peter's faith faltered. But Jesus grabbed him by the hand and lifted him up. Oh, you of little faith. He rebuked him. He taught him. He encouraged him. Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, you are certainly God's son. You must be God's son. And so, from fear to faith, in life, we're going to have to go through our fears to have a mature and a maturing faith. We're going to face things that are going to make us afraid. Living without a mate that dies. Working through unfaithfulness in our homes, our difficulties in the church, or our physical illnesses and maladies that we have to face and work through them. All kinds of challenges are going to come into our lives. Here we're going to be afraid. I want you to think about this story. Faith can be developed when it's time of fear if we will put our faith in the Lord. Then our third episode, remember, we're only going to do four, so we're moving right along. This will give you a little hope. What is the confession? You are the Christ. And then just a short time after, God forbid it. A confession and then a denial. What's the lesson? From impossible to imperative. And I would suggest to you, if you don't get anything else from the lesson, learn this one. From impossible. What we say is impossible. God may say, no, John, it's not impossible. In fact, it's imperative. You must do this. Let's go and see. We're now in Caesarea Philippi. This is in the northern part of Galilee, up towards Syria. And there was a city there named after Caesar. And it was a place of pagan idolatry. And this was the place where Jesus went with his disciples, where he asked them, who do men say that I am? If they gave him the popular responses of the day, Jeremiah, John the Baptist raised of the dead, Elijah. But he said, who do you say that I am? Who do you believe that I am? Peter steps forward and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And he was commended by Jesus for making that truthful and factual and faithful confession. But then shortly thereafter, they have this conversation. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be what? Killed. And be raised up on the third day. He began to tell them what's coming. They didn't really believe it. They couldn't understand it. It was not in their world of how they organized and understood what Jesus was about. How could this be? He would be a failure if he allowed this to happen to him. And what was Peter's response? Peter took him aside. Now, remember, Peter is taking aside the very one he says, thou art the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. He takes him aside and began to rebuke him. What does it mean to rebuke somebody?
Well, in strong words, you're saying, you're not right. You got this wrong. Now wait, let me get this straight. Peter, just a few moments ago, said Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And now he says, you're wrong about this. How do you harmonize that? How does that come out of the same mind, out of the same mouth? Well, just think about those times where you were a self-contradiction. Are you a Christian? Oh, yes. But then how do you square that with what you did this morning or yesterday? How do you square that? Peter says, God forbid it, Lord. God's not going to let that happen to you. He'll forbid it. This shall never happen to you. Now, I've tried to imagine, why did Peter do that? Well, first of all, and he tells us later specifically why, but I want to look at the psychology of that. I think Peter did that because, if you will, he just thought Jesus was too pessimistic. Lord, you're on a roll here. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. God's not going to allow anybody to kill you. He had seen Jesus raise people from the dead. He had seen him walk on water. He had seen him feed the 5,000. He had seen him do this and this and this. But he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interest, but man's. What did he call him? A stumbling block. He called him Satan. He literally wasn't Satan. He's saying, you're acting like Satan. Just like Satan came into the wilderness and tempted me for 40 days and was a stumbling block to me, tried to put stumbling blocks in my path. That's what you are right now, Peter. You're saying you don't have to go to the cross. You don't have to die. God won't allow that. Why? Because you're setting your mind on God, on man's interest, not God's. For you are not setting your mind on God's interest, but man's. I want to ask, our agenda or his? Is it going to be my agenda or God's agenda in my life? Leave the religion of my parents and my youth to follow Christ? Impossible. No, imperative. Turn from addictive, sinful habits. Impossible. No, imperative. Keep promises in difficult times. I promise to do this to you and before God. Impossible. No, imperative. Accept consequences of life choices with hope. Sometimes we have to live with the consequences of our poor decisions. How can we do that with hope? Impossible. No, it's imperative. God will give us the power to do it. So, from impossible to imperative. In fact, if we are convinced that God has said this is the way, John, it's not impossible. It is imperative. We must look at it this way, and God will provide the power and the way to do it. And then our last episode is the one that we most often think about when we think about Peter's denials. I will never, ever deny you. But then just a little later, I don't know him. No, I do not know the man. from false confidence to leadership. Now, I want you to watch this carefully. Look how Jesus takes a man who's absolutely brimming over with confidence that he will stick with the Lord. But it's a false confidence. He doesn't understand his weakness. And look how Jesus shows him his weakness. Not to destroy him, but to make him into a strong leader. The Last Supper. You'll recall the scene. At this Last Supper, Jesus reveals that one around the table will betray him, and they'll be all at, is it I? He says it'll be the one that will dip with me in the cup. And also in the backdrop, you need to remember, they have been discussing and arguing for days who is the greatest in the kingdom. Keep that in mind. They have this carnal understanding of the kingdom, and they're thinking of trying to get privileged positions and power. And they've been arguing who's the greatest. Keep that in mind as we look at what Jesus says. Then he turns to Simon. Remember, Simon, Simon. What does that mean? Y'all tell me.
Here.
Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. I want to pause here. He has demanded permission. Now, relate that to our lesson. I can't remember when that was, but it was sometime in this series. What does that relate to? 1 Corinthians 10:13. God does not allow us to be tempted beyond our ability to resist. Have you ever thought about that? Satan has to get permission. On some level, look at the story of Job. And God permits it because he can use it. He can use it to make us stronger. A thing untested is not as strong as when it is tested and found to be strong. We can have confidence in it. Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. Now let's pause and think about that metaphor. What does that suggest to us? How do you sift someone like wheat? Well, the way that you prepare wheat for ultimately to make bread, you harvest and you throw the wheat stalks down there with these with wheat in the chaff there. I can't even remember what the term is right now, but you know. And so then you put something heavy on it, like an animal or people, and they stomp on it, and it separates the kernel from the chaff. And then you come along with a winnowing fork or a basket and you throw it up in the air and the light chaff blows away. And the kernel of wheat falls back and you gather it up and you take it and grind it and make meal out of it. And ultimately bread. What does he say? Satan has asked for permission to see, Peter, if you're a heavyweight or a lightweight. Oh, I'm a heavyweight. Well, we're going to find out. You're going to find out whether you're a heavyweight or a lightweight. I want to ask us all, do you want to know whether or not your faith is a lightweight or a heavyweight? Do you want to know that? You need to know it in order to make it strong. If you think you're strong, when in fact you're weak, you're weaker than you think. There's hope for a person who knows that they have weak faith because they can take steps to strengthen it. Peter thought he was strong. He's demanded permission to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you. Now, what would be your reaction to the Lord who says, you know, there's going to come a great test in your life, John, but I pray for you. What would you say to the Lord if he told you that he had prayed for you? Look what Peter said. He said, I pray for you that your faith may not fail. And you, when once you have turned again, what is he also telling you? You're going to fail. But you're going to turn back. You're going to turn again. Strengthen your brother. What else did he tell him? I can still use you. In fact, I can use you even more to strengthen your brother. I'm going to take your failure and turn it into a strength. Now, brethren, I want you to get this. Think about your failures. Think about your weaknesses. When you think about God taking those failures and weaknesses and turning them into your strengths, does he have the power to do that? Absolutely. What you get. You know, there's very few good things about sin. There's at least one. You're learning not what not to do, and through that process you become stronger. Watch it. As he works with Peter.
But he said to him, now he replies, Peter replies, said, I prayed for you, Peter. Lord, with you, I'm ready to go both to prison and to death. In essence, what does he say? Lord, you don't need to be praying for me. Maybe some of these other disciples. Remember, they've been arguing over who was the greatest. You don't need to be praying for me. I'm strong. I'm ready to go both to prison and to death. Why did he say that? Because I believe he was. I believe with all my heart he was prepared to die for it. And I think I'll show you why I believe that. I think he demonstrates and proves he's willing to fight to the death for Jesus or go to prison.
Peter said to him, even though all may fall away, yet I will not.
And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you that this very night, before a rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times. Peter no more believed that than he. No, Lord, you just don't know me. I won't ever do that. I want to see the hands of those who are willing to say that there are things that you've done that you said you would never do. Am I the only one now? Thank you. I feel right at home. And I said with conviction and a sense of pride to other people, I'll never do what you've done. And I did. Maybe that was God's way of showing me how weak I was when I thought I was strong.
But Peter kept saying insistently, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all were saying the same thing also. And then into the Garden of Gethsemane, where from sorrow, from having Jesus tell them that he's going to die and that one will betray them, from sorrow, the three disciples who went with him could not remain awake. They were so demoralized. This thing is just not turning out the way we thought. And then they come to arrest him, and Peter whips out the sword and very surgically cuts off the ear of the high priest's servant. No, sir. He swung and missed and only got his ear. Why? He was going to make and prove that his boast was sure. He would die with the Lord, if that's what it meant. He would fight for him. He was a brave man physically. And behold, one of those who were with Jesus reached and drew out his sword, that's Peter, and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, to Peter, put your sword back into its place, for all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How then will the scriptures be fulfilled, which say that it must happen this way? Must happen this way. Having arrested him, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was now what? Following at a distance. He's afraid now. After they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight, looking intently at him, said, this man was with him too. But he denied it, saying, woman, I do not know him. A little later, another saw him and said, you are one of them too. But Peter said, man, I am not. About an hour had passed, another man began to insist, saying, certainly this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean too. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you're talking about. Immediately, while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. Have you ever seen that look? It's a look produced by self-incrimination. It pierces you to the core, knowing you have disappointed not only yourself, but even more especially Jesus. Turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, before a rooster crows today, you will deny me 3 times. And he went out and wept bitterly. You ever wept bitterly because of failure? I have. What caused Peter to be so demoralized that he denied the Lord? Why? What caused that? Jesus' refusal to let him fight. Put up your sword. This is not it. Just, he didn't know what to do. It's not turning out the way he thought. It isn't going in their minds to be a great kingdom where there'll be powers and prestige and places. It's totally foreign to what they had imagined it would be. He wouldn't let him fight. Put up your sword. This is not the way. Is your Christian walk ever taken such a sharp turn that you say, oh, wait, what is this? Why is the Lord allowing this? What's this all about? I didn't sign up for this. Jesus took, now note this, Jesus took away his strength. What was it? Physical courage and bravery. on a physical level, he wouldn't allow him to use it to make him a strong spiritual leader that put all of his faith and trust in Jesus and his word, even when he didn't understand. God's power in weakness. Do you see God's power in weakness in your life? Well, what about the cross? To the world, that looks exceedingly weak. It looks like the Jews have won. They've killed their adversary, their enemy. And God triumphs through the cross. And what about us? Can we also have power in our weakness? Remember this statement by Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you," God tells him about his thorn in the flesh. "For power is perfected in weakness. Therefore I am well content with weakness, for when I am weak, then I am strong." Why is that? When you're weak and you know it, you trust in God's power, not your own. And you become strong. When I am weak, then I am strong. And then the resurrection. The women come and find the stone rolled away. And the angel tells them, "But go tell his disciples and Peter." He is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Tell Peter. Why Peter? Look at the mess that Peter is in. He's absolutely destroyed. And Jesus did it. He had to tear him down in order to really build him up. Tell Peter. They go and do that. And Peter and John run to the tomb and find it empty. And then our last scene, we're back at the Sea of Galilee. It's in the morning. And again, he appears to them. Tells them to throw their nets on the other side. And they catch a great catch of fish. And John said, "It's the Lord!" And Peter hits the water. He can't wait to get to the Lord. This is the third time that the Lord has appeared to them. And then he has this conversation with Peter. "So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter," you got that? Simon Peter. "Simon, are you listening? Son of John, do you love me more than these?" Who had said that he did? He had. "Do you really love me more than these?" And it's hard to know what the "these" refers to. Either you're going back to fishing, or even more than these other disciples. He said to him, Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my lambs." He said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Shepherd my sheep." In each case, take a role of leadership. You're going to be my leader. You're going to be my shepherd. You're going to tend my lambs. You're ready now. You're strong now because you've become strong through weakness. He said to him the third time, and I don't think that's coincidental. He had denied him three times. He gives him three times to confess him. "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord," I want you to note this, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." Are you willing to go through the experiences of life where you not only know that God loves you, but you know that He knows that you love Him? The closest I've ever come to that in this life, on a physical level, with my parents. I always knew that my parents loved me. I was one of these children that I always felt blessed to have parents that I did. And I knew, I guess, that they knew that I loved them. Even though I wasn't that effusive in telling them all the time that I loved them. And then they became sick towards the end of their lives. And I cared for them for 7 years. And after that 7 years of caring for them, I know that they knew that I loved them. Do you know that God knows that you love Him? So you could say, Lord, I know that my actions at times have not demonstrated a true love for You, but You know that I really love You. I'm weak, and I don't always follow through the way I should. I know that. But You know I am devoted to You, and I will keep striving to be Your disciple. He will say to us, I can use you. Tend my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger, Peter, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not wish to go. Now this he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. So Peter, who said he would die for the Lord, he's going to get that opportunity. But not right then. From failure to faithfulness, from despair to joy, without the resurrection, what would Peter's future life have been like? You ever thought about that? What would Peter's life have been if the last time he ever saw Jesus is when Jesus looked at him after he had denied him three times? Our story. Have we failed spiritually? We all have. You know, we're in good company. Failure can be the beginning of growth. We can go from failure to faithfulness. We can learn to love the Lord and other people. We can go from despair to joy. Remember, the Lord only uses failure. Who's the only people He ever uses? Who say, I have said. If you say it, if you want to come to the Lord, please do it. As we stand.